This is Cheryl McQuaid with Lansing Fisher Body Historical Team. We're at the 602 UAW Union Hall and preparing to interview Andy Palomino. It is December 5th, 2005 at approximately 11 a.m., 11:20 a.m. First, we'll go around the room and introduce everybody in the room.
Jerry Smith.
Marilyn Coulter.
John Fedewa.
Doug Rademacher.
And Michael Fleming.
And Andy.
Andy,
would you please state your name and spell your last name for us, please?
First name Andy, last name Palermino, like a horse. P-A-L-E-R-M-I-N-O.
And Andy, what are you married? Do you have children?
I'm not married anymore, but I have my ex in my living with me with my 4-year-old adopted daughter.
And do you have any military service?
One day. In 1967, I got drafted, took my physical, and I was still in college, so I had to appeal the draft. Cost me $300. That was well spent.
And could you give us a little bit about your educational background?
Went to high school in Amityville, went to Penn State in the 60s, got a degree in architecture, but then went back to school after I was working for the state of Pennsylvania and got a master's in planning and management. That was 100 years ago. And that was in early 1971, 72.
And what is your address?
5305 River Ridge Drive, Lansing, Michigan, 48917.
Mike Fleming, Andy. What's your national origin? Your national origin?
Oh.
What national origin are you?
Oh, my parents from Italy.
And you would consider yourself an Italian?
No, I'm American. No, I'm an Italian-American.
Italian-American?
Yeah. I grew up in Brooklyn. That was another country. I'm actually an illegal alien.
So, did you grow up in an Italian neighborhood?
No, as a matter of fact, I didn't. I grew up in a, you know, we talk about discrimination. I was a little kid. I grew up in a neighborhood where there was the Jewish Orthodox. I don't know if you know what those people are like. They got the tuft of hair hanging, and they were, yeah, that was a tough place to live. And you weren't allowed to walk through their neighborhood. If you did, they beat you up. That was fun. But that was, I moved out of Brooklyn when I was 12, and I moved to Amityville, out in Long Island.
Andy, why did you come to GM?
Why? Back in 1976, early 77, I had my own construction business in New Jersey, and there was a job listed where they wanted a press move from a rail car into the plant. So I had a friend of mine that had a big crane, so we bid on the job. We were the only ones that bid on it. And we took the building siding off, got the press off the rail car, and moved it almost into the building. And then I, in checking to make sure we had it in the right position, I took a 25-foot tape off my belt and went into the plant and looked at the foundation. And the foundation and the press didn't match. I guess what happened, the GM people had gotten the wrong drawings, and the plant people built the foundation, and then I was bringing the press in, and we had to stop the job and then take the press back outside, close the wall, and wait about 2 months to go back and do the job right. Sounds familiar. And they said to me at the time, we need people like you to know what they're doing. And I'm thinking, what do I know what I'm doing? I just took out a 25-foot tape and just was checking the distances between the foundation bolts to find out exactly how to put it in. And it was wrong. And so they end up offering me a job. And I took it because I was in construction. And when you work construction, especially I was working in New Jersey, I was working 7 days, 7 and 8 days a week just about. I ate home with my family once or twice a week, and it really was a pain. And then when I got the job with GM, it was like dying and going to heaven. But that plant was New Departure High at Bering. I worked there from late 76 to 81 and then quit because the plant closed. They were they basically made wheel bearings for all the GM, actually GM, Ford, and Chrysler. And at that time, the Japanese were dumping bearings into this country, and Roger Smith had just taken over General Motors. And in his wisdom, he closed our plant. Right after that, when the plant eventually, it was sold to the employees for a two-year period. And then after that, the plant went out of business, and now today there's a nine-hole golf course on the site. So I left GM and I came to Lansing working for a different company. And then I came to Oldsmobile back in early or late 82 looking for work for the new other company I was working for. And when they found out I had worked at GM, they offered me a job and I came back. So I had a break of about a year and a half between. So I worked in Lansing ever since late 82, early 83. I worked at Plant 1 until about the early 90s, then came to the body plant in early 90, 91, 92. And, of course, up until now, they closed.
Do you remember your first day walking into a Fisher Body plant and some of your feelings about that?
Well, it's funny because I'll never forget the first day I walked into the plant in New Jersey during the war, World War II, that is. The plant in New Jersey had presses or equipment that was making shells for the war. And when I drove up to the plant, it had machine gun nests on the four corners with wire. I thought it was Railway State Prison. And it said, New Departure Height, Division of General Motors. Now, I worked at Plant 1 when I came to Lansing for about 10 or 11 years, and I always drove by here because I live right near Fisher Body, so I used to always see this plant. And then I thought the plant was old, but the plant in New Jersey actually was even older, but I could tell from the enthusiasm of the people that it was a great place to work. I'll never forget when I first came here. I was treated, people were very, very nice to me. I originally came as a vacation replacement in maintenance. What a horror show that was. I worked in different departments every week and different shifts, and I didn't know anybody. And I was totally lost. I even got lost in the plant, and I couldn't find my way out. I was up in the grillage.
But you were vacation replacement. What does that mean?
Well, during the summer, they have supervisors go out in maintenance on vacation. So you might 1 week be in paint, next week be in the body shop, next week be in trim, and be on different shifts with different supervisors. And I was a total stranger. And they didn't have any kind of program where they kind of broke you in. You showed up on Monday morning. That's it. You're on your own, pal. But since I've worked for GM, I knew that's how they operated, so I suffered through it. But you remember Carl Gretzinger?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
He's the one that I was up in the grillage with, and he worked here, and we got lost. He had to ask one of the guys in the plant how to get out of there. And they all laughed, and I felt easy. But in working in the plant, it was quite old, but of course, over the last several years, we redid the body shop and we made a ton of improvements. It's unfortunate that they closed the plant, but it was probably the best work experience I've had working at the body plant, better than any place.
Michael Fleming.
Andy, you know, as you came in, your first experience was vacation replacement. And which sent you all over the place. How long was it before you got your own department, and where was that?
I worked just the summer of 92, it was summer of 93. And I ended up, they decided to put me into facilities because with my background, I knew a lot about a lot of doing a lot of things. And they felt with all these changeovers they were doing, we were moving offices, they were moving the line, they were doing a lot of stuff, and they didn't have the manpower, so they put me in that area, and I stayed there ever since. Then I became the phone coordinator for the plant, and then how I got involved with Cheryl, when Plant 1 was being demolished, they had millions of dollars worth of furniture that they were going to just demolish, knock the building down. We went there, and I think we got, I don't know if you guys remember the paint shop office, not the paint shop. Oh, yeah, the paint shop offices that were up on the roof.
the paint department used to be fragmented all over the plant. The left hand didn't know what the right hand was doing, so it made sense to consolidate everybody in one place. And they said, well, where are we going to find an office? I said, well, we'll put it out on the roof. And they all laughed. We're having a meeting like we are now. You can't put the office on the roof. I said, you dumb shits. You put the office there and you put a roof over it. And now it's out of the way, and it'll never have to be moved again like you've been doing over the years. So that's what we ended up doing. And then Cheryl was working with me, and we went to plant one, and we weren't really stealing the furniture, but they treated us like we were. We'd collect furniture. A lot of the furniture went into the engineering offices, into the shop. There was a lot of the foreman enclosures and a lot of the offices. We put furniture everywhere. We probably picked up $2 million worth of furniture that would have been just thrown in the dumpsters. In fact, I think they're doing that now. They're trying to come up with, trying to save money for the new plant by just taking what they can out of plant one, out of here, right? Out of the body plant?
Could be.
I mean, I have no idea. But I remember when they were demolishing plant one, building 66 and 64, which was across the street. They had the shops there. They had millions of dollars worth of equipment, all kinds of Vidmar benches and all kinds of tools. They just left it there. They wouldn't even let the people buy it, and they just knocked it all over. It's incredible.
So when you first came over here and you were doing the vacation replacement, did you work with skilled trades people?
That's all I worked with, the skilled trades.
And you said that everybody was very nice to you. Do you remember any pranks or... do you remember anything special about the people that you worked with?
They're all crazy, actually. No. First of all, when you're working in like in engineering, of course, I always ran into a lot of guys that acted like they knew what they were doing. And they basically never asked anybody for input. I was never like that. When I had my own business, and I would sit down at a table like we are now discussing doing a job, I didn't tell the guys what to do. I said, here's what we got to do, guys. Let's come up with the best way to do it, and everybody would have input in what we're doing so that we'd come up with the easiest way to do it. I never felt that you should demand to do something one way. Here's a job. Meanwhile, I didn't know what when I first got it, I wasn't sure what to do, so I never would ever tell anybody that because I'd look like an idiot. So I would tell them, hey, I'm new. I need your help. Here's what we got to do. Now, of course, with vacation replacement, a lot of times at the body shop, I was carrying radios. And I remember when they would call up the C&M line, I'd say A and B because that's how they had it in dispatch. And was it, who was the guy? Harry Gray? No. Harry, he worked in, he was a maintenance supervisor. I would lie and tell him I was somebody else because, who's this? And I realized I didn't know what I was doing, so I'd give him another name. And they'd come up there, who are you? I said, oh, Jesus, I'm the maintenance supervisor. Jesus Christ, you're not Harry. Harry Gray, yeah, he worked in, I don't know if you remember Harry?
Yeah.
Harry came to work one day with his wife's Volkswagen.
Uh-oh.
and they turned it over. He came into work. He was all pissed off. He said, Mother, I said, Harry, you're driving a Volkswagen? I would have gone out there and turned the goddamn thing over, you dork. Yeah, he was something else. But he actually worked here and lived in Detroit. And he used to drive every day back and forth. I don't know how he did it. And I worked... You guys remember Bishop Cadle?
Yeah.
Bishop was a good guy. He was one of the nicest supervisors. He was more helpful than just about anybody. He bent over backwards to help you, and that's how everybody was. So the skilled trades, I became friends with a lot of these guys. In fact, I was actually, I had more friends that were in the trades and worked in the, the regular hourly people than the salary, because a lot of the salary people were dorks. I would trust them as far as I could throw this table. And it's unfortunate that a lot of these people were like that. But when they came up with this idea to have subcontracting review. They asked me, well, the union guys wanted me to work with Dave Carco. The reason they did is because they knew that I was upfront and honest. I didn't bullshit. And when we were doing that Building 28 job, we got a bid of $350,000 to take out the stacker. Remember we had that stacker? And clean up the site and fill in the train well, which would have been, what, track 8? We filled that in with concrete, and we got rid of the bridge. Well, I went before management, and I said, you know what? The shop can do that job a lot cheaper than $350,000. Oh, they cannot. I said, what do you mean? I'll tell you what. I'll run the job. I'll get with the shop, and we'll review it. We ended up running the whole job. We did it. We hired a guy to come in with a crane and take that stacker out, or what do you call it, it was a stacker. This thing, the coal pile the coal conveyor. Anyway, the shop did the job. We did it for $80,000. That included all their hours and the materials. And so we actually working together saved the company money. You know what happened? They got pissed at me. Ed Grant said, "What the hell are you doing this for? Now the shop's going to think they could do everything cheaper than everybody else." I said, "Wait a minute. These guys are sitting in the plant. They could a lot of times." These vendors that come in here are ripping General Motors off. They laugh all the way to the bank. If we can review a job and see that we can do it cheaper, we should. And we did. But it was an experience working here, that's for sure. But the biggest problem is I had a friend who worked at Chrysler, and they contract out everything, but they do have what we have here, subcontracting. And the reason they do that is because the vendors that are doing all the work for them start getting very greedy, and they think, oh, we can do what we want. Well, they still review the jobs because a lot of times the shops in Chrysler end up doing some of their own work because the vendors start getting a little... it's just like now when construction's doing well in town and you wanted to get someone to do some work on your home, they rip you off because they got all this work and they just will throw a big number, and if you want to pay them, good... And that's the whole thing. That's what GM should be doing everywhere with everything they do. You know, I told a few people, I think when I was talking to you, we were talking about our people finder, where you look up your name in the directory and it's a picture of me with an arrow and it points to my boss and then it points up to his boss. And then it has this incredible amount of managers that are above the people that even work here. And I'm thinking, what the hell are these people doing? I think when I did it, there was like 30 or 40 people above me before it even got to the guy running the company. And these are all people aren't in the plant. What are they doing? We're paying them. You know, there's a salary gap. The salaries at GM, like in engineering, are in the $80,000 range. And eighth level might be about $100,000 and a little bit over. Then it goes to over 200 and over that. And what are we paying these people for? When I was working New Departure Hyatt, when the plant was closing, all the managers in the plant got new jobs in General Motors. They all took off. And you know what happened? The plant had no managers. They were all gone, just general supervisors. And the plant was doing better without the managers there. They weren't there to interfere and screw up everything. But that's on the plant level. When you get above that, you wonder, what in the hell is General Motors doing with all these people? It's just incredible. Then they blame you guys. Mm-hmm. I'm thinking, what the hell? I saw Gary Calger, because I'm home. I'm on extended, I'm on disability. I'm Social Security approved my disability because I've had a lot of health problems in the last 2 years. Right after GM made the announcement earlier this year that they were losing money, Gary Calger was interviewed by a group like this from Wall Street. And what they do, they want to see what your plan is so they can rate your company and end up in the junk bond status. And they asked him, well, what's the problem with General Motors? And the first thing he said, well, it's the high gasoline prices. And, of course, some of these guys that are sitting there, these guys know what they're doing. They're businessmen, right? They said, wait a minute, gasoline price. What the hell are you talking about? Gasoline prices are across the board for everybody.
every car manufacturer is being affected by that. Oh, well, the biggest problem is the union and health care. What do you mean the union and health care? What it turned out, these guys said, listen, you're a manager, you're running this company, and if you thought that would have an effect on the company, then you should have made damn well sure to convince the union that, hey, we're working together. We got to all share in the cost to keep this company going. Never happened. You remember when Doug Frazier became on the board of directors of Chrysler back in the early 80s? And what happened? They developed a tremendous amount of credibility with Chrysler. When Lee Iacocca spoke, the people knew where he was coming from because he didn't bullshit. He told the truth. Well, when's the last time that General Motors or even Ford has had a union representative on their board? Mm-hmm. Yeah, they got the president or the chairman of Procter & Gamble and Johnson & Johnson. What the hell kind of nonsense is that? And in fact, today, before I came, they were talking about getting rid of Richard Wagner, and they were talking about the board of directors, that they got to get rid of them too because these people don't have a clue about running an auto company. And why, you know, even management, did the union ever talk to General Motors about, hey, shouldn't you put one of our people on the board of directors? We all are part of the same company. Doesn't happen. But I think that's going to change because it has to, because GM, with all their problems, in fact, I was talking to him last week because I was just, just on and on. But the big issue is, who's going to the, what's stopping people from going to the showrooms and buying our cars? We don't have the products. If we had cars that and trucks that people wanted, all this stuff would be, you know, mute. I'm driving a Hummer. You know what I did? I found out I wanted to get another vehicle, and I looked up the company car list. And you know what they had on there? Tons of H3s. So I called Jim Weissman, who works at Product Delivery, and I, Jim, is there a problem with the H3? He goes, no, what are you talking about? They can't make them fast enough. Well, then why the hell do they have so many on the company used? He said, you know why? Because they put them out in the fleet, and when they are ready to be turned in, there's someone waiting to buy it. Do you know how many thousands of vehicles that we've had in the fleet that we can't get rid of? Because nobody wants them? I'm thinking, oh, my God. Well, that should tell them something. Now they're making the new Pontiac. I just found out from a friend of mine that one of his buddies just got one. It took him 9 months to get it. That does not cut it. You go into a showroom, you want to buy that vehicle, you should be able to leave the next day with it either in your driveway or being prepped, but that's not going to happen. Now they're making that HHR. I guess they like that SSR number or whatever, so now they got HHR. Where do they get these names? They must pull them out of someone's butt.
Yeah, it's a letters and numbers game.
Doug Rademacher. Really,
just out of curiosity, what kind of vehicles would you guys want to go out and buy tomorrow that you're all excited about?
Soltas.
Well, I'd be honest with you, Doug Rademacher. We just looked at the Solstice. Good looking car, but it lacks.
It's not practical.
It doesn't have power seats. I couldn't believe that. I got in that thing, couldn't adjust the seat.
Oh, you could. It doesn't even have a mechanical adjustment?
It didn't have electrical seat. It didn't even have. So you couldn't adjust it to your height. So it's made for one person. And then the steering, hate to say it, but the darn tilt wheel was like what's in my daughter's Saturn. The manual one, you loosen it and you adjust it and you lock it back in place. It doesn't even have a quality tilt wheel in it. And here you're in what looks to be like a nice sports car, and it doesn't adjust to the driver. I thought we fail again. Got a good looking thing, but it's not made for the buyer.
Mike Fleming, my understanding is there's not very much room to carry stuff in it as well. I don't know if it has a trunk or not, but I was told that it didn't have very much room for that. I want to go back to when you were talking about someone being on a board of directors for General Motors. I believe that the UAW has tried to do that. The company resists such things, and until they decide that they want to, or until they decide that they have lost enough to get practical and change some things that they don't really want to change or haven't traditionally wanted to change, I think that's when we'll see.
I'll tell you what, it's preposterous. my older brother, I have two older brothers. The one has friends in very bad places. Anyway, growing up in New York, you find this out. Anyway, he said, Andy, you know what? The mob wouldn't even have a clue how to infiltrate General Motors. They could probably whack 50 of these executives, and the company would still be screwed up. They wouldn't know what to do. I said, yeah, it's pretty bad. He said, holy Christ, I was trying to get him an Avalanche. I lined up a company to use, and he's down in Florida. He says, hell, I can get one for $3,000 or $4,000 here cheaper. You can? I'm thinking, you know what they do with a lot of these company vehicles? They overload them with all these extras you don't need. And then what happens when you take off this discount, you end up back to where you would be if you just went into to a dealer and just pick one up. They overdo it. And the company is really the tail is wagging the dog. And it's really terrible because we talked about we don't have products that everyone is running to the showrooms to buy. When I heard about GM early this summer offering that discount to the employees, I said, oh, my God, are they nuts? Because what that only did, it just got all their sales and it pulled them forward. Like if you were in the process of buying a vehicle but you wanted to wait a month or two and you found out that you now had an opportunity to get one now a little cheaper, you would just do it. So now what happened? What happened near the tail end of that program? The sales dried up. And I don't know if Chrysler did it, but Ford did it. But Toyota and all the Japanese car companies and BMW and the rest of them, none of them did it. And every one of their sales still went up. Ours, GM spiked that one month, I guess it was July, like 30 or 40%. And then the next month, then near the tail end, it actually was down. And what's going to... And now that the general public is constantly talking about GM and its financial problems, especially with what's going on with Delphi, it's really making GM look bad. Mm-hmm. And there's nobody like a Lee Iacocca that's out there being a spokesman for this company saying, hey, listen, we've made a lot of mistakes, but we're General Motors and we support a lot of this company, this country, and we need to get back on track and we need your help. And you can take your Japanese car and shove it up your posterior for all we care. You want to take care of our country? Take care of our workers because they took care of you. It works both ways. You know, I can remember every year or every time they'd have a new contract. All of a sudden it gets in the newspapers like, oh my God, all these people are overpaid. That's bullshit. The people are overpaid are the managers. They don't broadcast that. When I heard about Delphi, and I heard this guy, what's his name, Stephen Miller, say that we're going to offer these golden parachutes to all the executives here to keep them so they can help rebuild Delphi, I said, you stupid son of a bitch. Are you brain dead? That would infuriate anybody with a common sense. What the hell kind of thing is that to say? And they've eventually got the union to go back to agree to pay some health care. And that was agreed on. And right, what they do right after that? They then make the announcement that they're closing plants and laying off 30,000 people. And I'm thinking, here they go again. These imbeciles. Did anybody know they were going to do that before, when they were voting on paying for health care? That's a disgrace. All of a sudden it happened from a Friday to a Monday that all of a sudden 30,000 people are going to lose their job and they're going to shut down all these plants. That's bullshit. This SSR, everyone's known for a long time that their production was weighing the sales. They couldn't, nobody wanted them because they were overpriced. What do they do? Instead of dropping the price by 10 grand, they try to put a bigger engine in it and then they make you pay a few dollars more. I mean, that vehicle's what, 40, 45,000?
Yeah. Mike Fleming, Andy. You talk about the SSR and the trials and tribulations that you're going through. If I can remember correctly, I don't know if you're familiar at all, when they first produced that, when it first came out, it was said that they had sales for 2 years. 2 years worth of sales is what they projected. They had so many orders for them. And then all of a sudden, it just kind of withered away. Are you familiar with that at all?
Mm-hmm.
Can you talk about the SSR and the sales, where you think it really went and what caused it to die?
I think there's two reasons. Number one, it was actually, it was kind of a neat vehicle, but it wasn't practical. And I think once people got over the fact that it was, you know, you really, like your women here, I don't think you would have gone to Myers to go shopping. Where were you going to put the groceries? How are you going to get the groceries in the back? And if you had the top up, maybe you could, but if the top's down, where are you going to put the grocery in the front seat? Now, what are you really doing? Plus, the price was incredible. Look at this Solvents, $19,000. HHR, $17,000. What the hell is this? It's $45,000. Are they crazy? I'm leasing a Hummer. The Hummer's price is almost the same as the SSR. I think what happened, once people got over the uniqueness of it and they realized the price, people went in the dealer, looked at it, and yeah, almost like it was a novelty, and then walked out. Nobody was going to buy it. They look at the price, their hair would stand on end, and there's no special deals. So I think they make a lot of mistakes. They don't talk to people. What they do, they just come up with an idea. You know, like the HHR. Why the hell wasn't the HHR, which looks like a PT Cruiser, made first? A few years ago. How long the PT Cruiser has been around? For five or six years at least. I met a guy when I was on a golf thing up north with a bunch of hourly and salary people get together. Dick Fenton, who's used to be body shop superintendent. He has a Fenton Follies, and we went up there, and one of the guys who became a friend of mine works in the plant for Chrysler that makes the PT Cruisers, and they're still selling them. And the reason is because of the price. The price has a lot to do with the demand. And I think what happened with the SSR, the price was so outrageous that it turned people away. You remember the Riata that was made here? $30,000, pretty close to that price back 10 years ago. And Mazda came out with the Miata. The Miata was about 13 or 14 grand. And those dealers were selling those cars for more than the sticker price, because they were so hot because of the price, and they're still selling them. That is common sense, something that's lacking in the managers that are running this company. You know, I'm sorry.
No.
Jerry Smith.
I just wondered, do you think I thought when they dropped the Oldsmobile part of it too, wasn't that a big shock to everyone too, that they didn't come out like Chrysler had the PT Cruiser, something different, something wild, whereas do you think it would have helped GM if they would have done something like that with the Oldsmobile? Instead of just getting rid of the Oldsmobile completely?
See, I worked for Oldsmobile, and unfortunately I disliked those people that were running the company immensely. They were a bunch of arrogant, over-educated incompetents. They were more concerned about the Oldsmobile Golf Classic than they were about selling vehicles. And when I first was working here in Lansing in the early 80s, we all were Oldsmobile. You were Fisher Body, and you were making the 88, the 98, and the Cutlasses, and they were all high volume. In fact, I think the 88 and 98 were number one in their class, and the Cutlass was doing great. So what do? They take the vehicles away from Lansing, and they bring in the Grand Am, the Somerset, which was the Buick, and the Calais. And they were they weren't a high quality or a high profit, and we all of a sudden weren't doing very well because the products were not people weren't running to the showrooms to buy these things. And then the 98 went elsewhere, and the 88, and then the sales, and then the designs. They had the 88 and 98 looked the same. I even drove an 88 company car to a meeting in Detroit coming back. I went in the parking lot with these guys, and I'm looking for a 98. They said, "What the hell are you talking about?" And you were driving an 88. I said, "Bullshit. I know one car from the other." Well, I didn't. It was the exact same interior that I had in my 98, and it was an 88 because they made them almost identical. And that was a disaster. Then they came out with their Bravada. That's where I think GM's biggest problem is. The Japanese concentrate on one vehicle and they perfect it. What they should have done, the van, the Chevy van, should have been the only manufacturer of General Motors vans, or maybe Chevrolet and GMC. Pontiac shouldn't have made a van, or in fact,
Oldsmobile. Ventura.
And like when they made the Cimarron, the Cadillac Cimarron. Jesus, Mary and Joseph, you got to be brain dead. But if they concentrated having Buick, you make these vehicles. Cadillac, you deal with luxury cars. Okay, Chevrolet, you're making, you got the Corvette. Okay, and now Cadillac's doing really well. They're better off. They weren't part of General Motors. But then you got Buick. And they got Saturn got put into the mix. Holy mackerel! They should have each a brand name should concentrate on a vehicle so they don't compete against each other. When you go out and buy a Bravada, you're taking sales away from another vehicle. Or when you buy a Silhouette, what the hell was Oldsmobile making Bravadas, which is a
Trailblazer?
Yeah. Or Jimmy. A van. It's a Jimmy. That's stupidity. So what happens, they're not competing with the rest of the world. They're taking sales away from each other. And the quality wasn't that great because they're just trying to compete with each other. They could care less about everybody else. But it's not their fault. It's the managers that come up with these bright ideas. You know, Toyota's got three vehicles. And then, of course, they have the Lexus line. But they concentrate on making those perfect. And they don't have 20 different models of that brand. They just have that vehicle, and that's it. Maybe the difference is the options. But we, for some, and like now, the Saturn, they're going to close one of the lines. That's embarrassing. Saturn had one time had this this niche in the public that, oh, it was a special company. When you went and you owned a Saturn, they treated you differently. How'd they treat you? As soon as you drive the car and you buy it, you drive out. But they had people believing that, you know, it was a special deal to buy a Saturn. Well, I don't think people feel that way anymore. And there's nothing under General Motors' ass getting them to start concentrate on certain products and pushing them. Is Grand Am made anymore?
It's called the G6 now. Moved it to Lake Orion.
The hell would they? Yeah, that's what I thought. What in the hell would they change? The Grand Am. Do you realize the following that that car has, as far as all the people that have bought it? I have a neighbor that has several of them, but they've since it was 84 when they first came out. Yeah. So for the last 20 years, Grand Am has always stood out as one of the neatest vehicles. And what did those stupid bastards do? They changed the name to G6. So. I'm a Grand Am owner. No, I'm a G6 owner. I think that's what you call it. Well, the Calais became what? The Achiever? Then it became...
The Alero.
What was the last thing? Alero. Now, GM has a problem in almost every area of the business. And the biggest problem is they blame everybody else, in fact, they blame the union for all their problems, and the union doesn't have a damn thing to do. It's poor management and stupidity from the top down to the first level in the plant. I was telling him, Mike, that when we were in Building 64, we had what they call the assessment center. They took the Grand Am, the Calais, and the Somerset, and they took a Toyota Corolla and a Honda Civic, and they took them through town. And they beat the pit. They drove them over railroad tracks. They tried to beat the car apart. And you know what? I see a Grand Am, and the mirrors are hanging off it, and it's falling apart. And you get into this. I went in and looked at the Honda, and the Honda was all dented because the guys hit curbs, and it was. They looked like they had destroyed it. And you know what? You still had to roll the window down a little to slam the door. It was so tight, and it didn't. They couldn't get it to anything to rattle on the vehicle. And the guy, one of the guys that worked there, used to do the door hinges and the door locks. And he said, "It's built. The door lock assembly is built just like a watch. Santa Claus could put it together. He just puts two bolts and it's done. The guy in the plant, he puts the two bolts and it's done, and it doesn't line up, and it's not right because it's not engineered right. It's junk. And that's where the biggest problem has been. And you would think after all these years, GM, people that are running the company would start saying, you know what, we're screwed up here. It doesn't take a rocket scientist to know the rubber bumpers for your hood bumpers. You drop your hood down. Building 66 at one time, about 350 of them for different models. They were all different. And I'm thinking, wow, they should be standard for every vehicle. You don't have to waste engineering dollars and time screwing around with that and concentrate on advertising a vehicle, making it more appealing to the public, pricing it. You know, all this extra people that design hood bumpers. There's two or three different companies designing the same product. It's crazy. But General Motors is like it's like a white elephant.
Mike
and
Fleming,
I feel sorry for you guys.
Mike Fleming, Andy, when you were in the Fisher Body plant, did you have any particular area that stood out the most for you as far as working in those areas, and a particular individual that you worked with that was one of your favorite people?
Oh, gosh. Well, I did mention earlier Bishop Cadel. Bishop Cadel was a maintenance supervisor that every single guy in the plant that I knew in skilled trades had a ton of respect for him, because he was good to the people that worked for him, and he treated everybody with respect, and he was a good guy. And you'd go out of your way to do work for him. That's how everybody was, and that's the kind of managers that GM needs, people that everyone likes. I remember when Lee Iacocca used to go to the plants after he had taken over Chrysler. He was treated like a celebrity. He'd go over and kiss the women, and every guy would want his, people even asked for his autograph. Can you imagine that? Roger Smith came to this plant around the same time, and he had to be protected by about 20 or 30 people because they wanted to kill him. And that's really where GM is suffering really right now.
Did you have a manager above you that was one that you, or a superintendent or someone that you could speak of that you thought was a pretty good people person that worked at Fisher Body?
Yeah, one guy is Dick Fenton. He's really good to, I mean, from what I gather from talking to guys who work with him, they all loved him. They said, you know, and he bent over backwards to help everybody. And that's the way everybody needs to be. We have jerks, which, you know, always seem to remember the bad. One time they interviewed me and asked me, if you're, this is right before I came to the plant, they said, Andy, if you supervise 33 people, which is what I was supervising, and you have one bad egg, what would you do? Would you spend time on that guy, or what would you do? I said, I want to tell you something. First of all, it's human nature. Not everyone's perfect. If I got one guy who's like, we had this one guy, Joe Sumble. Remember Joe? We used to catch him sleeping all the time. They used to want me to do so. I said, listen, there's 33 guys working for me, and 32 of them are doing a good job. I'm going to spend 99.9% of my time telling those guys what a good job they're doing and helping them out. Like, I was an engineer. Because I was an engineer, I could go to the crib, and I would buy, like, I went and the guys needed tools. I could authorize, I'd get the guys tools. A lot of the supervisors didn't want to be bothered. Oh, they're bringing them home. Who gives a shit they're bringing them home? The guy needs a tape measure. We go get a bunch of tapes for everybody. We just would do that. Well, that's what you do with the 32 people. You take care of them. If there's one bad egg, don't spend time busting, wasting your time trying to make him be something he can't be. If he's bad news, he's bad news. He's not going to change. Why waste all your efforts with him? Spend your time with the good people and concentrate on helping them out. And guess what? His lack of input into the organization will be totally ignored, because you're not going to find everyone working in skilled trades. Now, if you're on the line, you have to have a guy doing his job. If a guy's screwing off, you got to do something about it. But in skilled trades, if you find a guy sleeping or whatever, you kick him in the ass. One time he was sleeping, and He had his alarm set at 7 a.m. to wake up, so I turned it off.
I didn't wake him up. And about 9:30, he's walking out of the plant. And he clocked out, and then he came to me the next day and wanted to get paid 2 hours of overtime. And I just laughed. I said, what are you, nuts? You were sleeping, you dork. I turned the power off. So he couldn't wake up. Unreal. He was up in the crib up on the second floor. And what was that? Urethane. He was a pipe fitter. I don't know if you remember, Joe. He was a Pakistani.
Well, here we go. If you've got experiences like that, can you talk about some more experiences that were, you know, just really jovial ones that people played pranks on one another to have a good time, you know, be it regular working time, changeover, or whatever. Can you think of some of those stories?
Well, I tell you the one story. You guys remember Leonard Jones? He was our fire, worked in security. And, of course, Sam McGee, anyway. Back, we had that disgusting basement with all the equipment and crap down there, and we turned it into offices. Well, I told him the story that I was able to convince the shop that, hey, cleaning out that basement is anybody's job. Fork truck drivers, we use Charlie Farley and Vinny. I remember Vinny. Anyhow, Charlie Farley hit a sprinkler line. And instead of just moving away, he sat there, and all this black mud starts squirting out of the pipe, and he's covered with this, and we're all laughing. And we're yelling at him to move. Well, he froze. So one of the guys, and then, of course, after the mud came out, then water came out and washed him off, and the whole basement got flooded, but it ended up cleaning the place. It was so disgusting. But Charlie was sitting on the fork truck, and they had a... physically pull him off because he freaked out. I guess he had never been used to getting water on him or something. I don't know. But, you know, we had some. Anyhow, getting back to Leonard, when we were cleaning that basement out, I went down there with him, and we saw a rat that was that big. It was big as a cat. And he had the spotlight, and all of a sudden he took off, and I could see the light going like this as he's running out of the area, and he leaves me there. And I said a few choice words to him, and he goes, Andy, I hate rats. I said, what the hell you think? I love them? Get your ass back here. I want to get out of here, because you couldn't walk through there. I had to climb over stuff. He eventually walked back, and then I climbed out of there, and I thought, oh, my God. Well, we ended up cleaning out that place. And almost, I'd say $500,000 worth of credit we got for crap that was down there. There was robotic transformers, about 30 of them, that little Jay Levine had bought for the body shop, and they didn't need them. And it was still on the crates. There was there were two on a crate. There were transformers probably about that big.
How big?
About maybe 3 feet long and about a foot and a half square, and there was over 30 of them. And then there was wire, all kinds of wire that was down there. We ended up, the guys in the shop ended up, I guess it was the parts people, ended up getting a ton of money back on all this stuff. Some of the stuff was worth a fortune, and we paid big bucks for it, and nobody even knew that stuff was down there because everything was buried. It was bad. But then they built the offices. And guess what happened? Those jobs, we were almost ready to open the offices. It was all carpeted, and we were getting ready to move. We built the Union Center. And what happens? Charlie Farley is working on a Saturday. Yeah. And that dumb SOB is up in Building 1, and he hits the 2-inch sprinkler. And the place was flooded. But we go downstairs, and... it was destroyed. All that water went through the cracks in the floor, and all the ceiling tile fell, and it was a mess. And it took probably 2 weeks to clean the mess, and we had to rip up all the carpet and redo it. Oh, God, he was dangerous.
Did they ever take him off the truck?
Jerry Smith.
I don't know if you know Charlie. He's really goofy.
Mike Fleming. For those of you that don't know Charlie Farley was a material driver who ended up becoming the EPG
plant manager.
no, he was the employee participation group leader.
Advisor.
Yeah, advisor. He was just a guy that had been there for quite some time. I don't know that Charlie might have had.
Oh, he's got to be in his 40 years plus.
Yeah, 40 years. So he's been there for a while.
No, it's been there a long time.
Charlie was really a smart guy. So I used to always say, you're acting, aren't you? No. Because he always had his mind on it. He was always thinking of something, never concentrating on what he was doing. That's why he had a lot of these accidents. Oh, gosh.
Andy, Doug Rademacher here. Would you please tell me a little bit about, you said you've worked for the auto industry from your home state. Then you came to Lansing and worked at the main plant, Oldsmobile. And what we're talking about today is the Fisher Body plant. I was curious, can you tell me about the difference? What did you see at the Fisher Body plant that stood out compared to the other places you'd been to?
Well, I'll tell you, the biggest thing is the people. I probably have more friends here. They're like a family, and that's the whole thing. You know, I can remember when my late wife was teaching, there are people that are dedicated to their job, and yet I can remember when she would teach, and when the day was over, some of these teachers would be running the kids over to get out of the parking lot and leave. That's not like that at GM in Fisher Body. People are working together, and they help each other, and that's a big difference. And it doesn't take a rocket scientist to figure that out. Now, when I worked in Plant 1, they had a 652 a lot of good guys, but they had a lot of attitude problems. They really did. And I know when EDS first came to the Lansing site, they were pretty brutal to these people. In fact, I don't know if they still are. They treated them like they were lepers. Meanwhile, they were working for the company trying to, you know, make it make money. But the body plant was unique, and that's why you got a new plant. That's why everything's happening in the positive, except for closing the plant, which I think was a major mistake. But it's the people. You know, you could, the facilities in Oklahoma City were newer, and they're closing the plant. It's because the people, the Lansing site has got people who have their parents worked here. Some people, I have friends whose grandparents worked here. This is probably the most unique operation in the company.
Can you explain how the union fits into that? Have you've seen other
the union 602? I remember one time before I came here, I went over to plant 2 to take an inventory of all the fork truck equipment we had in Lansing, including this plant. And I was there, and I thought I was going to get mugged. We're there at night doing the job when no one's around, and we had flashlights. We're writing down all the brass tag numbers, and these guys came around, about four or five of them. They said, "What are you doing here?" I said, "What does it look like I'm doing? I'm taking inventory of your equipment." Well, what do you do? In other words, I was interrogated. I was with another guy. We thought it was funny, but they were pissed. And I'm thinking, what the hell's with you? We're here doing our job, for Christ's sakes. Well, nobody ever acted like that here. If somebody caught me doing something like that, taking inventory of the fork truck equipment and writing down the brass tag numbers, they'd help me. That's the difference. They'd come over and help you. Now, I think Plant 2 guys have, unfortunately, because of their it's almost like it's jinxed. If, you know, with all the vehicles they've made, after a while, those people there probably got shell-shocked from all the bad experiences of having products and being enthusiastic, and then all of a sudden they don't have a job again. Do you remember, was it NUMMI, which used to be a plant in California, Fremont, that made used to make the Camaro and Grand Am, the Camaro and the Firebird wasn't doing well. They closed the plant, then they reopened it, and the attitude of the people was 100% different, because they were getting good money, had a good job, and then went to no job. It's pretty awful. But then to go back, you're going to say, it happened to us once, it's not going to happen the second time. Now, here it's never happened, because the attitude and the product here was good, except for the GM 20s. That was a mistake, but they still ended up making money here. It's the people. They've had May 6th when the plant closed. Did that ever happen here before? No, it's pretty awful. I've already gone through a plant closing, and it's awful. Because all of a sudden you got a great job and all kinds of great perks, whether you're hourly or salary, and all of a sudden you don't know where the next dollar's coming from. Even though you're collecting some benefits, that doesn't help your ego. It really doesn't. I have a neighbor, Fred Garcia. He used to be a fork truck driver. I think he's working as a janitor. Fred was up in the jobs bank here, and he hated it. He asked the managers, can he go back and just work as a janitor, because he couldn't. He was losing his mind sitting around. No one here was used to that, because the people here have a different work ethic. That's awful. And that was the other issue. General Motors, the managers of this company, should have never delayed the construction. If they finally made the decision to build that plant, they started. Knowing construction, you never delay a job if you really plan on finishing, because every month that you stop the construction, you're just adding costs. They made the window of May to the opening of the new plant get further and further apart. It makes General Motors a laughing stock. I heard the people on Wall Street saying, you got this Fisher Body, Lansing, quality. You know, they were talking about J.D. Power Survey, great quality. Why wouldn't they work out a program where they kept the product in the plant so that while the new plant was being constructed, they could then move the people like in a weekend or as close to the same date as possible instead of leaving that huge break? You know, when the people come back to work, there's going to be less people from 602. Their attitude toward General Motors, I don't think, is going to be the way it was before they closed this place, because they're going to realize that, you know what, this could happen tomorrow again. Just like Saturn, they might open this new plant, but if they don't build a product that we at this table are going to run to buy, it'll be an exercise in futility. Grand Am, they always had great sales, and that's the big issue. They everything that GM has been involved in, you know, over the last couple of years has been mistakes, one mistake after the other.
Andy, Mike Fleming. GM has for years relied upon what's called brand loyalty. Can you talk about some of the vehicles that you own that were General Motors vehicles throughout your life, and maybe some people you know that purchased GM vehicles, and what types they were?
Well, bottom line is I've never owned anything except GM, except one year I had a Volkswagen when I first got out of school, but it was a used vehicle. But my first car was a 58 Oldsmobile Holiday with a J2 engine. I wish I still had that vehicle. God, it's worth a fortune. But like I mentioned earlier, my relatives, when I was a kid growing up in Brooklyn, they used to always tell me, if ever, when you grow up and you buy your car, make sure you buy an Oldsmobile made in Lansing. And, of course, I'd say, Lansing, where's Lansing? They said, in Michigan. Why buy a car there? Well, because that's the home of Oldsmobile. They have their relatives in Brooklyn, a bunch of Italians, and they're telling me about buying an Oldsmobile, and here it is 40, 50 years later, and it's gone. And this was my mother, it's my father's Oldsmobile, it's nobody's Oldsmobile. But General Motors brand loyalty, that is, they have so many issues that they've screwed up. I have an old Chevy 2 Nova 66. Then in the late 80s, they came up with the Nova, which was the one from NUMMI, and they put the word Nova on. I was pissed. I said, what the hell? That's not a Nova. This is a Nova. I'm driving. And then the Grand Am. Now it's a G6. Mamma mia. They have screwed up every single, you mentioned brand loyalty. They Cadillac, they haven't changed the name Cadillac. I don't know why, but they probably should. But Cadillac is one of the only divisions that still has that Cadillac emblem. You know the Cadillac? You remember Oldsmobile used to have the Oldsmobile emblem? Right. Then all of a sudden they came with that thing with the line through it. Now what the hell? Remember they had, I guess they had it on the Alero. It was like a circle, like an oblong, and it had like a look.
A cube.
Is that what that was? Is that what that was the GM emblem? And I can remember the 88s, the 98s, the Cutlass. They all had that little thing. On. I still have them at home. I saved some of them. They're brand new. Before they put on the car, I still save some of them. I have Oldsmobile dishes at home. Back in 1990, they were demolishing they had a lunchroom up. Well, they had a cafeteria up in 64, and they had dinners up there. And they had thousands of Oldsmobile dishes. It has the Rocket 88, and it says Oldsmobile, and silverware that says Oldsmobile on it. I was cleaning out the place, and they wanted me to take the dishes and everything and throw it in the dumpster. Time out. I'm not doing that. You got to be nuts. So I went to the women's club. And Nancy Bissell, I've known for years, and they worked up a sale, and we brought all the dishes to Building 32, and they had a sale, and they sold everything. And the Women's Club made like about $5,000. I still have a whole set of dishes. I got a set of dishes out of that. I paid for them, and yet here now, they'll be worth money because the company's gone, and it's terrible. Mm-hmm. But no, brand loyalty, they screwed up. I tell you what, why don't you ask me what GM hasn't screwed up? Because I'll tell you right now, I couldn't tell you. there are some people, no matter what they do something wrong. Brand loyalty, Fiat? Yeah, Fiat. They owned a portion of Fiat. Here, Fiat, we're giving you our ownership portion back to you. But here's another $4 billion to go with it. If you give something to somebody, they usually give you something back. But that's not how GM did it. I mean, they have made major mistakes. Just recently with this union going back and negotiating so that, you pay some of the benefits for health care. Whoop-de-doo. Then a couple of weeks later, they announced the plant closings and all that. It just goes on and on and on. And even you guys having me sitting here, the company should be doing this, that manages it, but they don't have a clue. They all have their three-piece suits and their company cars and their secretaries. And most of them couldn't find their ass with two hands. And I'm serious. It's very upsetting. And you know what the worst thing is? They're always blaming somebody else. It's the union. I fucking went to time with the union. You stupid bastard. If it wasn't for the union, you wouldn't have a job. And it's sad. It really is. And I don't think anybody has an answer. I think the best thing that happened to General Motors, they have this guy, Kevorkian. He ought to get, Kevorkian out of prison. And the two of them ought to run the company. Get Ross Perot back. I don't know if you ever heard the story of how Ross Perot got out of General Motors. They were having a board meeting with all these upper crust of the management of the world in the United States, and they were having a meeting. And GM wasn't doing that well at the time. They weren't doing great, but he wanted to have a meeting to discuss the figures on bonuses for the executives. And of course, Ross Perot is a wealthy man. He doesn't need a dime. He could work for nothing. He, raised his hand and he said he wanted to interrupt. And Roger Smith said, what do you have to say? And he got up and stood up on the, he's a little guy. He stood up on the chair and he said, listen, you shouldn't be discussing bonuses. Nobody needs a bonus. The people that work in this company, the executives are making good money. What they need to do is take care of the Indians. You take care of the Indians, and guess what, guys? They'll take care of the chiefs. That's how it works. You don't. And of course, Roger Smith told him, sit down and shut up. And they got into an argument because Roger Smith didn't have a clue how to run a business. And here he's arguing with this guy. So what's he do? He gives him $375 million to get rid of him. God, I wish I had been there. They should have shot Roger Smith. But it didn't happen. But no, they need somebody in this company that will wake up the American people. Nobody's loyal to General Motors. They're not even loyal to themselves. They're not loyal to their own employees. So why would an American be conscious of
worrying about the General Motors. If the goddamn company doesn't care about the employees, why should the people, especially when they do so many stupid things that insults the average person's intelligence?
Mike Fleming, Andy, talk about GM and what it had done for the United States through the years and through the different wars and what type of icon it really is.
Well, I'll tell you what. Back in 1964, I was playing baseball when I was in college, and I ended up in the hospital. I got hit with a foul ball, and they found out I had cancer. Anyway, I had my cancer surgery at Memorial Sloan Kettering. Alfred Sloan Kettering Engine Plant. These were guys who at one time were running General Motors. General Motors had, in the years past, their employees and their managers, from the old school, they have hospitals that they donated money to. In other words, they've done a lot outside of the auto industry, but this company's been the backbone of our country. And the problem is that the company, the people that are running, aren't smart enough to take advantage of that and educate the American people. And that's why I was talking about these infomercials. General Motors has done a lot for a lot of people, during the wars especially. And the war's over, and now we're, quote, junk bond status. That's an absolute disgrace. Most of those people that are on these executive boards wouldn't even have a job if it wasn't for the UAW and General Motors. You know, you heard the stories about during the 30s when the UAW formed, the managers would hire thugs to beat them up and people were killed. I was working at New Departure High at Bering, and when I saw what was going on, they threatened to fire me because I got with the union and they wanted to organize the salary into the union. So I said, I think that's a great idea because we all work for the same. And then my boss called me into his office and he started giving me a bunch of shit, and I told him to go to hell. I said, hey, what are you going to fire me? Fire me, you bastard. I'll have your ass. You know, here I just left my own business where I used to work with the union. I had all union people working for me when I had my own business. And the shop steward used to come to the jobs and ask me to put more men on. So I would sit down with the guy and go over the job with him and show him all the hours and how much I was getting paid, and I'd tell him the truth. You know, I could add two or three more guys, but guess what? When the job is over, we're all going to be out of a job. Do you want me to do that, or you want, X number of guys? I can only hire a certain number of people. And eventually they believed me because I was telling the truth. And that's the other thing. Wow, General Motors managers. I think it started with Roger Smith. He developed such a wall between the majority of the workers and, quote, managers, that it's pretty hard to break down. And now with all the foreign competition, GM couldn't be in worse shape. When they need to have the best managers in the world running the company, they got a bunch of nitwits. We discussed this new plant. Has anybody in this room had any input in what's happening at the new plant that's being built to house a 602 union? Has anyone had any involvement out there in the actual layout of the plant? Well, who's doing it?
They are. Yeah, there is a effort to have the union, and our input is being received, and we are looking at a new facility.
But the building's built. Right.
We've been in there, and we have actually, the plant has actually been expanded. The jobs have been increased. We'll hire every 602 employee. We'll have a job, and we'll be looking to employ another 500 or more. And we are working with the corporation to secure a site to build a new union hall on site out there. So we are doing a few things.
Okay, we did Building 28. And what happened was we needed more space for the parts for the Malibu, and it did not make sense to ship them here to Lansing and put them in a warehouse and ship them here because it's just so. When we decided to use that site, it made sense. It was right by it was an open area because you know our this site is limited or the body plant's limited in where it could put anything. Of course, in the parking lot with the headcount reduction as such, you had space here for the. For the paint shop, but we didn't just design it and build it. We sat with everybody and went over it and got the input and made all kind of, we kept tweaking it while it was in the process of getting built, and we kept making changes. Then we came up with the idea, hey, we could save money by filling in the train well. It wasn't my idea. One of the trades said that. Why don't we fill in the train well? We could use the extra storage, and Joe Williams and a few other guys for materials there. And instead of, you know how much they wanted for that, you know that bridge that was, you know, that bridge that's over there? We moved it. I think it cost us about $25,000 to move it. But you know how much they wanted for a new one? Nobody would know. $500,000. We got a price from the vendor. We said, what the? Are you out of your mind? We could build that for less. It's just a bunch of structural steel with some couple of big hydraulic units. What the? Oh, it's custom. That's what I said to these guys. And we said, we'll move it. So we spent money and closed. It gave more square footage, and we moved the bridge. That was a combination of all the people working.
You've had many benefits over the years. Could you please share what's your most valuable benefit that you received by being part of General Motors Corporation?
Well, of course, the biggest benefit is having a job and having security. And right now, I guess because of what's happening, that's going to affect a lot of people, and that is always, that fortunately has always been the issue with the union. Since they have worked for General Motors, people have always been concerned about their job, and I can understand that, because there's times when people don't have jobs. It's pretty awful. So having a good pay, good benefits, having friends. I used to come to work more to socialize and hang out with people, and every once in a while I did something. I said, geez, I just did something to save the company a couple $100,000. Nobody gives a shit, but I know I did it, so at least I feel like I don't. I can go down to the guy's office and shoot the crap for a few minutes, but at least when there's a job to be done, we do it. But when there's nothing to do, we can't. Like in the last year that I was working 204, I had nothing to do because we weren't, no model change, nothing was going on. So, and guys would come over, what are you doing? What the hell does it look like I'm doing? I'm sitting on my ass doing nothing. Give me something to do, I'll do it. I'll be glad to. That's frustrating. Because when we were doing all these model changes, I remember I used to work every Christmas. I used to work all the holidays. And you know what? When I think about it now, I wish I hadn't done that because of my family. Because the few extra dollars changed my life. But the best part of General Motors is the perks and having a good job. Because unfortunately, the way things are going, who knows? We might be dinosaurs someday. Here, you remember the General Motors? Yeah, I remember that company. Yeah, but that's probably the biggest thing: having job security, constant work too. When I was in construction, it was either feast or famine. You'd have a good job, you got it done, and just as it wound down, you got to be out looking for other work, or you got to lay people off. You don't want to do that. But fortunately, the auto industry, we make a product that has to be replaced periodically because of they wear out, and people get tired of the same vehicle. So that's always going to be there. The only problem is, over the last several years, that picture has changed. There's more people buying a foreign car. When I lived in Ann Arbor, I hated Ann Arbor. Oh, crikey. I lived there when I left New Jersey in 1981. I was the only one that had an American car on the whole block. I had an 88 ML Chevy, and everybody else had Hondas and this and that. One guy who was a Jew had a Porsche. He came over and started bragging about his cars. You dumb shit, that thing was made in Nazi Germany, right where they gassed all your relatives. You know, oh my God, that's politically incorrect. I said, up yours. Wow. But I never liked Ann Arbor. I can't stand Michigan. Those people there are just like, if you were to take an inventory, there's very few GM dealers or American Auto dealers in Ann Arbor. They're all foreign cars, and it's a disgrace. Where the hell is University of Michigan getting a majority of their money? From the taxes that are paid by the union and all the people that are related to the auto industry in the state. That's why it's just incredible. I was in church when I was living in Ann Arbor, and I made I was an usher. And this guy, we used to have a part of the service where joys and concerns. Well, this nitwit stands up.
He's got a Mazda, a Toyota, and a Volvo. Those are his three family cars, and he's a doctor working in Ann Arbor on a grant given to University of Michigan by the state. Where did the money come from? Us. And he says, I'm really concerned about the unemployment in the auto industry, and he said, it's bullshit. And I took the, I had the hymnal, and I took it, and I was sitting in the back, and I slammed it down on the floor so hard that he jumped off the floor. And, of course, everybody jumped back, and I'm very outspoken. Hearing him in the middle of the church, and this, I said, time out. Mr. whatever his name was, I said, quit your BS, will you? When you leave this, your joys and concerns about the auto industry, and you go out in the parking lot to your Mazda and your Japanese car, don't. You could act like you care. You don't care. Well, you know what happened? A year or so later, that was in the early 80s when the auto industry wasn't doing too hot, because that's when the plant I worked at closed and I left. The grant money got pulled and he lost his job. And I said, thank you, Lord, there is some justice in this world. But our country it's got a problem, but our biggest problem with General Motors is they got to make products that people are running to buy. And then all this other stuff hopefully will take care of itself. See, in the past, that's happened, and so they've never corrected their problems. They just ignored them. Oh, I'm going to get a $275,000 bonus. Yippee! God, no. They need to do a lot of things. In fact, they can start with the letter A and go all the way to Z, and everything in between GM's executives need to fix. The problem is they don't have the people. They don't know, like now when I mention this Delphi guy who's, it used to be J.T. Battenberg. Oh, God, I've met him. He thinks he shits ice cream, that guy. He's such a creep. Oh, God, I'm so impressed. I actually thought one time of impressing him in the grill of my car. That guy used to work here in Lansing. He took over Delphi and he ran it into the crapper. But then they blame the union. Oh, that's terrible. They're making $26 an hour. Oh, really? What are you making? Oh, I make $2 million a year. Oh, okay. You must put in a lot of hours. You know what I mean? Give me a break. It's so it's embarrassing when you hear this stuff and you realize that this is a corporation that has put hundreds of millions of people in jobs and is really taking care of so many people's lives in the positive way, and now it's being handled so poorly that God knows if we're going to be around. They keep talking about GM possibly going bankrupt, that they got to take care of Delphi. That's in the news every day just about. And it's pathetic. Delphi, Delco, you know Delco, AC Delco. That would, when I used to work on my old cars, everything, AC Delco, that's the best you can get. But then they took over and they changed it. Oh, we don't need AC. That's just like a Delphi. Then why did they break it off? I don't know. It doesn't even make sense to me. Visteon was Ford, but I think they're not in bad a shape as Delphi. But GM, you know, they have to find another Christ, I guess, to take care of this company, because they are so poorly managed that there's so many issues that they need to address, and God knows where do you start. But always... the thing of always trying to blame the union, that's worn out. They're so full of shit, it makes me sick when I think of it every day. All these people that bust their asses and do their job and show up every day and give up vacations and take care of this and that for the company so they can have a good job, and they're loyal, and what do they get for it? Nothing. The first minute somebody screws up, you're out on the street. Now, the only positive thing in Lansing is that they had a great workforce, and by luck, we here in Lansing happen to be given products, except for, well, you can't use Plant 2. That's a very bad example. The El Dorado, the SSR, the electric car, the Riata. They were searching for what they probably should have done is built some old, like 1,000 GTOs, 66 GTOs, run a line of them and then go to another vehicle and use that as a specialty plant. Would have done great. Do you know there's a plant in Indiana that makes Avante? Remember the old Studebaker Avante? Mm-hmm. They still make them. They make about 1,000 a year.
And they make it, and all the people that have been working here for the last several years are still there. They don't make up 5,000, 20,000. They don't have to put them on the market. They just have a certain niche that people are buying them. The little Cobra, the Shelby Cobra, they got plants that are making them. They sell them for about 50,000. It's a replica of the original. Those companies are still making vehicles. And here, the biggest corporation, and they can't find their ass with two hands. And every time they have a problem, they got to blame somebody else. And it is frustrating. I've been working with benefits since January, trying to get my length of service corrected since I had a break in New Jersey, and it's still not done. That's why I haven't officially completely retired, because they don't. Salary payroll is in Kingston, Jamaica, man. They got benefits in Auckland, New Zealand, Bombay, India, Budapest, Hungary, and, of course, Toronto. Then they have a few others in a different place, but what they've done, they've taken every bit of our operation and sent it everywhere, so you're getting real quality. That's a step backwards. They're supposed to be stepping forward.
And Doug Radman here, that's to save a buck, yet we haven't seemed to be able to save a dime.
You get what you pay for. I called in January. I was taking care of some phones. I talked to a guy. His name was Balky. It wasn't, but I called him Balky. Remember that show with Pierce Bronson? Bronson Pinchot. He used to have that accent. I call up a 313 phone to have phones in Building 9 moved and changed. And I'm talking to this guy, and I said, where am I calling? He goes, I'm in Budapest. You mean Budapest, Hungary? He goes, yeah. I said, Jesus Christ, I called 313 area code. How the hell did I get Budapest? He goes, oh, the phone transfers over. We work for EDS. They gave us the job of doing all the VMEs for General Motors. I said, get the... I said, how much are they paying you, Balky? You know, his name wasn't Balky. I called him that. He goes, oh, I get $160 American a week. I make good money. I said, no, you don't, you stupid shit. That job in this country was $1,600 a week. Oh, I come to America to get a job. I said, forget it. That's why you got it, pal. Because so now you had a conversation for 10 minutes, laughing and joking with this guy. I hang up. I come to work the next day. My phone's disconnected. Balky disconnected my phone. My name is on the order for the phone coordinator with my phone number and my all my information, and that authorized them to do it. So I had a call again, and I talked to somebody else that was even worse than him. And, I got order in front of me. It has, we did it correct. It's Andy Palama. Oh, you Italiano. I said, no, I'm an American. Yes. Yeah, my parents are Italian. I'm an American. Yeah, well, I got the order. Andy Palamino. That's me, you stupid shit. I'm the phone. You got, then, oh, I see. Okay, we fix. I'm on Dave Carcar's phone. Well, I said, I got to get out of here. Well, that was one of the last times I had any contact with this guy or these people. And you know what? They're still doing the job. You get what you pay for. Wow. No, the company is in deep shit trouble. And I'll tell you what's saving General Motors, believe it or not. I hate the... It's actually positive. It's the union. They've tried to, over the years, make it seem as though people that work for the UAW are overpaid, don't do anything. And I'll tell you what, that is no longer the case. They are now Wall Street people, since I watch TV a lot because I'm home. They are burying General Motors managers. They want Wagner, just like Matt Millen, to get, you're not doing your, the job is screwed up. Meanwhile, it's not Matt Millen's fault. It's just, the Lions kind of remind me of General Motors. They blame one guy. At least they have somebody to point a finger at. It's the players. It's the people that are on the field. If I was making a lot of money, I would probably, it depends. I mean, Christ, you don't have to do anything. Just show up. But it's pathetic. But it's got nothing to do with two or three people. It's the team. That's what's wrong with General Motors. They got so many things wrong with it. They don't even know where to start. And the biggest issue is they don't have any person who's the leader that's really grabbing the whole thing by the guglionis and saying, you know what? First we're going to do is get rid of a lot of this overhead we have. And we're going to start spending money on product and advertising all the things that we've done that are positive. Instead of every single day in the newspapers and in the media, they talk about General Motors in the negative way.
and that is not helping the company. And nobody, Wagner stands up on the podium and he bullshits and he never mentions that. Yeah, you know, you guys, you ought to get pissed. You know, you guys are spending most of your goddamn time criticizing us. Why don't you cut us some slack and realize that, you know, General Motors is the backbone of this goddamn country, whether you like it or not. And we're trying the best we can. I would probably fall on the floor if I heard him say that, but yet they don't. He just, well, we're hoping to be profitable in 2009 but along with that, my bonus, I don't give two shits because I'm going to, I got to, you know, you can look up his name on the internet or on the GM stock and you see he's got 25,000 shares of GM and all these shares. Oh my, but now at $20 a share, he probably is going to have to get a part time job at Lowe's.
Andy, Mike Fleming, what was, with all the names and all of that Fisher Body has been through, are you going to miss the Fisher Body plant, or do you call it something else?
Yeah, I do already. I've been gone since January. Yeah, I do miss being here. In fact, what the hell is an engineer coming over to 602? I came here to see John Anthony because we're friends, and I said, you know what? He's cool, and he could probably help me because nobody else can. This goddamn crap with benefits is making me crazy. So I came here, and that's because I knew I could talk to somebody, and I end up spending a couple hours bending your ear because I'm home alone a lot of times, and I don't talk very much. So when I get an opportunity to talk, I get diarrhea of the mouth and yap away. But no, this is like a home. That's the biggest positive thing, having job security or having a job, but also having people you can, like now, being able to come to talk to people, seeing people and seeing them in Myers and going over and giving somebody a hug. I never had that before. It's cool. Salary people don't do that. They throw something at you if you're in Myers. In fact, I see guys that I've worked with, and when if I see them, I go in another aisle a lot of times. I don't want to look at them.
Plant superintendents, you've been through a couple. Name a couple of them. Give me your best thoughts.
Oh, you mean like general, like Jim Hopkins?
And okay. Okay.
Yeah, I'd say that's person. I don't know what you guys think of Jim Hopkins, but I've had an opportunity to work with him one-on-one. And my first wife died 10 years ago, and I had only been in the plant a couple of months. And he called me to his office. So I show up there, and he said, throws me his keys. He said, I got some stuff in my car. Take the car and take it home. I'd never really talked to him before, and I didn't know what he was talking about. So I walked out in the parking lot. I started walking out to the interior parking lot, and Barbara Rossi walked over with me. She said, his wife made some food for you. So I went out in his car, and it was filled with all these casseroles and stuff. So I took everything and went home, brought it home, came back, and then when I went home the next day, it was after my wife's funeral, I had a huge plant that the plant, used no pun intended, sent to me. And you know what? That's never happened to me in my life. And that guy has got class. But that's the type of person. General Motors, more of those type of people I need running this company. That's a car person. I don't know how many of you have had contact with him. I didn't know Frank Shotters. I only met him a couple of times. But there's been nobody like Jim Zupkis. I went over, one day I snuck out of work with a bunch of other guys. And we went to Hawk Hollow. And we were supposed to have a meeting with him. And Barbara Rossi called us. It was like a group meeting about some issue, and they said Mr. Zupkis had to cancel his meeting. So I show up at the golf course, and there he is on the golf cart. And I said, well, you son of a bitch, we had a meeting and you didn't show, and you called it off. He said, don't tell on me. Well, who am I going to tell? And he laughed, and he said, and then one time I was coming down the aisle in building two. And he's with a guy by the name of, he was his boss, a little guy. Can't think of his name now. Anyway, they have an issue with ventilation. They were having problems up in the front office with ventilation, a lot of dust and dirt. So he says, Palomino. Oh, Tim was the guy's name. He said, Palomino. Yeah, the ventilation, you're going to fix it? And I said the truth. I said, Mr. Zupkis, that's not my job.
What do you mean? Not your job. You sound like a goddamn Mexican. And then he said, you son of a bitch, you hear what I just said? Of course, he yelled it out being funny. Then he realized what he said. He called me, and he goes back to his office. Then he called me down. He goes, you dumb son of a bitch, do you realize what you made me do? I said, time out. I didn't make you do anything. You spurt that out of your mouth on your own. And we laughed, and I left. And he's a plant manager. I'm a pissant engineer. I mean, he could do that in 1 minute and fire me. But he was a good guy, and a lot of people bent over backwards to work with him. He could be a prick if you wanted to. They actually almost fired me and my two bosses, because several years ago, the executive conference room used to be, I'm trying to remember who was in there, Wookie Hopkins was his office. And they needed chairs. I said, well, I'm not going to buy anything. You can't buy anything. He said, I'm the plant manager. I want you to buy 20 chairs for the executive conference room. Okay. And I leave. And I'm with some woman, a vendor, who told him how much they were. Well, about 2 months later, the chairs get delivered. And he just comes back from vacation. And people are, I guess the problems in the plant, and he comes back from vacation. He doesn't want to listen to all this shit. Well, they're all dumping on him. So he got pissed. And he's looking around. He said, God damn it. Where the hell did these chairs come from? He forgot. I want to find out who bought them. Because, you know, they were bitching about money. So I want you to find out who bought them.